for the Ramban Kabur tonight. We're doing Perek Lamed Hey Pasuk Ches, a really very very odd pasuk. The pasuk says as follows: Parsh Vayishla, Vatamas Devora Me Nekes Rivka, Vatikaver Me Tachas Leveit El Tachas Alone Vaykra Shemo Alone Bachus. The pasuk tells us that Devora, we have not as of yet met, at least not by name, the nurse of Rivka passed away, and for some reason she was with Yaakov. And Vatikaver Mitachas Leveit El Tachas Alone, the pasuk decided to tell us this, and Yaakov then buried her. She was buried there under a tree. Vaykra Shemo Alon Bachos. And therefore Yaakov called the name the tree of weeping, of wailing. Wailing willow, some might say. Right? So it was really quite strange that the pasuk decided to tell us this. We don't even know who Devorah is. We don't know why she's with Yaakov. And this is my own little point, which the Ramban is not going to address, but I just think it's fascinating. In my knowledge of the Chumash, I can think of only two places where people bury things under trees. And they are barely 5 psukim apart from each other. There's got to be some connection. Yaakov and his sons, after they defeat the city of Shechem, and the enemies that presumably attack them afterwards, go and bury idols under a tree. Then a few seconds later, Yaakov buries Devorah under a tree. What's pshat? That, I do not know. I have no answer for it. But let's go into the pshat in this pasuk. This very strange pasuk about the Torah telling us something very odd, but we don't really know much about. Who's Devorah? We are first meeting her now, and she's dying. Right now, there actually was a Menekes who was mentioned when Rivka had been going along with Eved Avraham back in Parshas Vayisara, but it's not given a name. So presumably that's who we're talking about, but we'll see in a second. Let's see the Ramban. But Thomas Devorah Menekes Rivka. I don't understand why the pasuk stuck this right in the middle of telling us about how he called the place Beis El, and she died there, and he buried her right by Beis El. And the upcoming pasuk of after Yaakov names it, then Hashem appears to Avraham, to Yaakov. Like, why is the Torah injecting this story over here? He's not even asking the question that I asked about. Why is the Torah injecting this story anywhere? It seems really random, right? He's asking, like, why specifically over here? And it interrupts us with this other story that was happening at the same time. When Yaakov was going to Luz, the place of Luz, which is Beis El, and he called it this name. And then Hashem appeared to him. As soon as he built the Mizbeach and he called out the name of Hashem, what happened? Hashem appeared to him. And why would it place this right in the middle and interrupt the story? Let alone, again, the question I was asking about, why is it bothering to tell us this in the first place? And appears, about what is the most likely pshat? Mash Amrin Rebbe Zayn, that which Chazal say, Shirmos Lemisas Rivka. That it wasn't really about the death of Devorah, but rather it was about the death of Rivka. L'chein kara shem ha-makom ahu alon b'chus. Which is, in fact, why Yaakov called it weeping willow. Right? The reason why he referred to it as a tree of bewailing, of crying. It'll be very strange that there's such wailing over 2 points. Number one, she's the Menekes. It's not like it was a member of the family. She was, maybe a beloved, cherished friend, but she wasn't, like, a member of the family. And even if she were so beloved, she died at a ripe old age. If she was the handmaiden, the nurse of Yaakov's mother, and Yaakov is in his 80s right now, right? Beyond that, even. Yaakov is in his 100s right now, right? We're already past him being by love. Yaakov is very old. His mother was presumably even older, and her handmaiden was also presumably, right? Indubitably, older as well! Why is it so sad that she died? That, oh my gosh, they were all mourning her. Very, very strange. So it must be that referring to the death of Rivka, who, while she might have been old, was Yaakov's mother. Yaakov mourned his mother who loved him, the tzaddikah, who loved him. Bishocha usosha. And she was the one who sent him. Velo zachta lir oso b'shuvo. And yet she did not merit to see him, even though she saved Yaakov's life. She was the one who had been the, you know, the mastermind behind the whole plan where Yaakov was able to go and get the brachos. She didn't merit to see his return. Ugh, and in fact, Chazal tells us right, Yaakov was punished for delaying too long. L'chein nigla ilav elokim, ubeirach was so l'nachamo, kasher asa l'yitzlak aviv Avraham mavas Avraham. After Avraham died, so too, after Avraham's death, Hashem appeared to Yitzchak and he comforted him. So that's why over here Hashem also appeared. It wasn't merely because Yaakov built him his bayah, but Hashem then appeared to him, but that it was actually also in connection to this little story which gets interjected with, that after the Menekes, Devorah died, which is really a code word for saying Rivka died, so Hashem came, appeared to Yaakov, and comforted him, and said, don't worry about the loss of your mother. Sorry, you know, he's not a mother. And in fact, Mishneim Amru Chachamim, Birchas Avelim Birchu. Right, that Hashem blessed him with the Brach of Avelim. Now, hold on a second. What bothering you will address in 1 second, I assume. This is Yulah, and he brings proof to this. Mash Amru Lamat, that which we say below. Vayavo Yaakov El Yitzchak Aviv Mamre Kiryas Arabe. That Yaakov reaches his father, Yitzchak. But Yigo Haisa Rivka Shem, and had Rivka been there too. Payamask Yerel Aviv Elimo. What it said to his father and his mother. It's a good diak, right? The Raman's guy. We only hear about Yaakov reaching his father Yitzchak. It sounds like Rivka's already passed on. Certainly would have mentioned that he was excited. He came and he met with his mother, not just with his father, if his mother was still around. So it must have been that Rivka was dead. Okay, what have we not addressed here at all? Yeah, go for it. What's bothering you?
What's the point of the puzzle being so cryptic and slush on that?
Oh, excellent. No. If it really was trying to tell us that Rivka died, how would it tell us that Devorah died? You know, I know how to say Rivka died. It's by saying Rivka died. Not that Devorah died, and we have to infer from that, well, wait a second, Rivka is no longer on the scene, as we see when it gets there, and also she's tangentially related to Devorah in terms of their relationship, and after all, Yaakov cries a lot here and names this place after Devorah. So you know what, probably shouted then Rivka. It's very strange, you're 100% right, Joseph. Why would the Torah hide it? Let's see what the Ramban says. Because of Rashi, Rashi says, Olofisha Elimo, as Yomosa, and because Hashem hid the day of her death, in order so that people should not curse her upon her death. When they find out, Rivka died, good riddance to that old hag. Why? Because look who came out from her loins. Look who came out from her womb. Esav a Russian. Everyone cursed Rivka, one of the slums. They would all curse her and be happy that she died. So Hashem hid her death from the people. And similarly, therefore, the Torah hid her death from us. It only alluded to it in a cryptic fashion. We haven't fully explained yet, but let's see further. Raman says, it's not like Rashi said this strange thing all on his own. But what does it mean? What's the deeper pshat? He asks a question, right? He alludes to a question. The Torah never tells us about Leah's death. So why would it specifically hide Rivka's? Now you could argue, well, because of the reason Rashi just told us, because he wants people to curse her upon her death, because she had a son like Esav, who was a Russian, who everyone hated, unlike Leah, who had good children. However, it's still strange. I mean, you can't only rely on the fact that the Torah omitted this detail and say, from there we see that it must have been that it's referring to her death. It's still very odd. Like, it didn't explain all the misos of the imahos, because it doesn't tell us about Leah's death either. So he continues on. What was bothering us here was not that it didn't mention her death at all, as it didn't mention at all Leah's, but here it alluded to it, and then we were wondering, Joseph, your exact point, why do so in such an enigmatic fashion? Why only allude to it in code? And then it hung it on her handmaiden, her nurse. Once it already decides to tell us about her death, why would it not hide it? However, Rashi, he goes on to analyze Rashi's reason, which was that there was a curse that people would say about Rivka. But that doesn't make so much sense, the Ramban says. Shahare is kiruv b'misas Yitzchak. We talk about Yitzchak's death. Wouldn't people curse Yitzchak as well? So Esav, Yaakov, and Avraham. The pasuk tells us straight up that Esav and Yaakov in the end of this parsha, right, bury Yitzchak. Aval Yitachin lomar the following pshat. Why Rashi's medrash still makes sense. Shalom ayala kavod b'misasam. Yaakov and Usha. The ace of Soniosa, below Yavosha. The Yitzchak, Keuena, the Nenu Yotimi Besa. The Pasuk wanted to hide it because, not merely so that people wouldn't curse her because of Asa, but also because there was no kavod in her Misa. After all, Yaakov, the one who loved her, was not there. Asa, who hated her, certainly wasn't going to go and take care of her and bury her. It's not what Rishon do to people they hate. And Yitzchak, whose eyes were dim, couldn't leave his house. You know, he was an old man. He was an old, frail, blind man, and wasn't able to go and take care of things. Therefore, the Pasuk did not want to mention this because it didn't want to tell us that the B'nai Ches, these Kenanim, were the ones who buried our great-great-great-grandmother, Rivka. They said, who's going to take her out? Who's going to go before her? Who's going to go and bury her? Avram isn't there. Yitzhak Yoshe Bebayis, the Ain of Chaos. Yitzhak is unable to leave. He's blind. Yaakov Halach Lulapadon Ram. Yaakov is no longer there. He book Asa Rashia Kama, Vyamarin Vriyasa, Litan Vizya, Tahal Kadain Yinit. What's going to happen? Asa is going to go and bury her? Then everyone's going to go and curse her. Now we understand the curse deeper. Everyone's going to go and say, look who her son is. Asa, the one who left to bury her. Everyone's going to curse her. Ma asu. Hotsiu mitasa balayla. So what did they do? They quickly buried her. So that way nobody would go and curse her. And didn't give Asa a chance to bury her. Amar b'yosi bar chanina. Fafisha hotsiu mitasa balayla. Lo pirshu atuva misasa elemen atzad. Therefore, because they hid her away in the dark of night, that's when they buried her. Something the pasuk did not emphasize. Hadahu deksiv vayikra shmo alon b'chus shnei b'chios. It was the tree of crying. Not only is it the fact that it's strange that they would name the tree, name this whole area after the death of the Menikta, but also because the pasuk itself sounds like there's a plural of wailing, and one referring to Devorah, but the other one to Rivka. Bahadu deksiv vayira elokim el Yaakov v'yirachol. So ma birchol birchol zav elam birchol adkan. And that also is how Hashem appeared to him. Yeah, it's a really, really Devorah. I don't think the Ramban's ever done that. Devorah, the Pasuk says Devorah died. We don't think the Pasuk is joking about that. But who's it alluding to? What's the deeper reason of telling us that she died? This was where Yaakov found out that his mother Rivka died. Because the Asa was the only one who was available to bury her. Therefore, we were afraid of the Kalala, as opposed to Yitzhak, where Yaakov was also buried. Here it would be Al Shem Asa that she was buried. Everyone would see that Asa was buried here. Lo ro sheyel akavod. And they didn't want her to have kavod, they hid her away. And this is what the Pasuk is talking about. Why is the Devorah? Now he just addresses a side shot question. Why is the Devorah in Yaakov? And why was Devorah put Yaakov? Right? Like, what in the world is she doing there? Maybe after she came with Rivka initially, with Eliezer, a few parshios ago. So then she returned back to her home. And then afterwards she returned with Yaakov to see, you know, her old, you know, in her old age. She wanted to go and see her young master, right? Who she had been sent with initially. So now that she no longer needed her, she went back home. And now maybe she was coming back to go and check out, see how her master was doing, see how Rivka was doing. Or else, perhaps, Ocean is asking Begidol Bnei Yaakov, Lekavod Rivka, Lava, Sava, Hayisav, Bebezo. Or else, maybe she, just as, you know, sometimes it happens that, like, you know, the same nanny raised this kid, and, like, you know, the same Mora taught this child, and then 20 years later, she teaches that child's child. Right? So similarly here, Devorah wanted to be involved with the family. So she kept out of Kavod for Rivka, she went, and she took care of the children of Yaakov as well. Or perhaps, you know what, maybe it's not the same Devorah. And maybe it's not the same one that was sent with Rivka. Maybe it's another one. She was left there along, and that's why she was there. And therefore, Yaakov brought her along to take care of her in order to repay her for the kindness that she had done for his mother. And out of honor for his mother, he brought her along. Rabbos, that they had, you know, the wealthy people have lots of nannies. The Ramban's trying to walk away from the shot that Moshe Darshan said that it was the same one who had taken care of her mother, of Yaakov's mother, his mother, of Rivka, and therefore he suggested it was just some other one who had come along and they had lots of nannies. Okay, why did I pick this one? I mean, it's interesting in terms of his analysis of Pshat, right? The way he does this is always incredible, you know, quoting later Pesukim and proving his point, asking about Mamari Chazal, defending Mamari Chazal, that's always true. But why did I pick this Ramban specific to talk about? I think there's a very deep message here, a very, very important one. Let's start on a simple level. When you guys heard this, presumably for the first time, I'm sure some of you have seen it before. But for those of you that haven't, I don't know. I remember when I heard this Ramban the first time, I learned it inside the first time. I was struck by how sad it was. Think about it for just a moment. Poor Rivka. The Pasuk has to hide her death because we don't want anyone to know that there was no one to bury her in her old age and in her death. There was no one to take to do the basic chesed shalemes, to take care of her after she died. Yitzhak's old and blind. Esav's of Russia. We don't even want him to get involved. Yaakov, her son is far away. And she died and had no one to take care of her. It's pitiful. It's very, very tragic. But it's more tragic even than that. Take it a step further. Think about it from Rivka's perspective. As she lay there, on her deathbed, can you imagine how she looked back on her life? Can you imagine what she must have felt when she looked at the fruit of her labor? She's not getting any maybe fulfillment. Her husband, for years at this point, he's old and weak. That's what her mom keeps on emphasizing. You know, she's taking care of him, presumably. He's around, even if Yitzhak, I don't know, you know, his mental state, maybe he was still the same Yitzhak. But at the very least, she's taking care of her old, frail husband. What about her children? Esau arose from her. This wasn't Sarah and Ishmael, who from some other woman's child, was banished from the home, sent away because he was a Russia and didn't live up to the heritage that the Avos were trying to pass on to their children. Is that her own child? She failed miserably with, or she could have felt that she did. She could have said, oh my gosh, what have I done? What have I wrought? Look at Esau, who I've raised. What will become of me? And my son Yaakov, my son who I dearly love, who I thought I pinned all my hopes on, I haven't heard from him for over 2 decades. Unlike Avram, unlike Yitzhak, who the Pasuk testified for us about, where they died in old age and comfort in themselves, living out the good old last golden years of their life. What about Rivka? What was her perspective? She didn't even know if Yaakov was alive anymore. How does she know that Esav didn't kill him? She doesn't know if he even got married. She doesn't know that he has grandkids for her. She doesn't know any of this. It's awfully tragic. It really is. Think about her perspective. But with that, I want to turn to the message. Now that we know, now that we're aware of the fact that Rivka died a very, very pitiful death, alone, essentially, without any knowledge of whether or not she had planted those seeds, whether or not they would ever be harvested, whether or not Klal Yisrael would indeed grow from her. She wouldn't have any more children anymore. She knew it was over. Did she succeed in passing on the heritage? Well, on one ground, no. The other one is a big question mark. She has no idea. She could have been a depressed, sad old lady. And for all I know, I have no idea what Rivka's perspective was. I would imagine it was one of bitachon, of emunah, of trust in Hashem, and hoping, knowing that he had some master plan, that things would all work out well, and that her efforts hadn't been in vain. But ignoring Rivka's own perspective, let's look about what she saw and what she knew. She knew and saw nothing. She expected Klal Yisrael, at least without some special miraculous plan, to maybe be lost. Maybe this idea of building a nation of Ovdei Hashem was doomed to fail. Maybe it just wasn't going to work out. And she died before she got to see any bit of that fulfillment. But what we see is that there's always a plan. That what presumably Rivka knew and trusted in, we have the privilege of recognizing that you can have someone whose life's work was in shambles, who had nothing going for her left, who expected that all her spiritual aspirations, all her dreams were dashed. But we know the truth. We get the hindsight. We get the 20,000 feet above the air, bird's eye view. We know what's going to happen. Don't worry, Yaakov's alive and well. Yaakov's going to successfully get past Esav. Yaakov's children are all going to be tzaddikim. The future of Klal Yisrael is booming right now. Everything's great. Those seeds that she had planted are about to sprout or have already begun to sprout. And as the Torah will continue, and as our nation continues, everything works out just fine. There'll be bumps along the way, but everything is going to be great. We know that. But what this should give us, that confident hope, is that no matter what circumstance one finds himself in, that even when things might seem horrendous, we're on a downtick, and it seems like we've been on a downtick for a long time, whether we're talking about anybody as an individual in any given situation, or when we're talking about Klal Yisrael in general, like Rita Sidoros after Rita Sidoros, that things couldn't be any worse now with the internet, Averos were created, and nowadays we have no hope. We should remember that it doesn't matter how dark or desperate things might seem, we might see no obvious out. We think all we've begot are Esavs, and our little Yaakovs may not even exist. We should have the confidence to recognize, not in ourselves, but in Hashem. The confidence in Hashem. That there's a plan, things are still going according to that plan. And that there's hope comes. That things are going to be good. That we're going to succeed, we're going to improve. And hopefully, if we keep that mindset, not only is it going to happen anyhow, this is the truth, but it will inspire us to recognize things are not as hopeless as they might seem. And presumably, like Rivka herself had, will give us the outlook of emunah, of bitachon, of saying that we could do better because we are not doomed for failure. We're doomed for success. We're going to succeed. Let's be active players now. Let's push ourselves. Let's make sure that Klal Yisrael doesn't just say, look, this is too hard, we have no hope. Let's say, we can rise above, we will rise above. We're going to do so much good. And that mindset will carry us into the time when, Baruch Hashem, everything will just be good.